Picture this. You have a wildly unpredictable, super smart, highly autonomous artificial intelligence.
Oh, boy.
Right. Like an LLM that can think, reason, and basically act on its own.
Yeah.
Now, you take that AI and you plug it directly into your company's most sensitive, mission-critical internal databases.
Yeah, that sounds like an absolute nightmare.
It really does. You're giving it access to customer records, financial transactions, literally everything. It sounds like a security disaster just waiting to happen.
Oh, absolutely.
Because if you've ever watched an LLM hallucinate or just get confused by a prompt injection attack, the idea of giving it direct access to your internal banking API is terrifying.
Historically, yeah, it would be a massive risk. I mean, in an era where everyone is rushing toward AI-driven automation, developers spend a ton of time obsessing over how smart the AI model itself is,
Right,
right?
the benchmark scores and all that.
Exactly. But securing the mechanics of how and where that AI actually connects to your systems, that infrastructure is just as critical, if not more so, than the model itself. Because the smartest model in the world is, well, it's useless if it's a liability to your enterprise architecture.
And that is exactly our mission for this deep dive. Today, we are exploring a system called Janus. It's an enterprise-grade model context protocol, or MCP, API gateway and portal.
That's a mouthful.
It is, but it's fascinating. Drawing directly from the technical documentation and the GitHub repository specs we're analyzing today, Janus acts as basically the ultimate translator and the ultimate bouncer for these LLMs.
Yeah, the bouncer analogy is spot on.
Right. So we're going to examine how this tool manages to balance intense, like paranoid security, with actual developer convenience, and how it scales from a single, air-gapped laptop all the way up to massive Kubernetes clusters.
So to understand how Janus pulls off that balancing act, we first have to look at how it protects an enterprise at the most fundamental level, which is the VIP passes.
The API credentials.
Exactly. If an LLM needs to pull data from Salesforce or an internal database, it needs a key. How Janus handles that key sets the foundation for the entire architecture.
Well, let's look at the execution sequence then, because the mechanics here are really cool. When an LLM client, say Claude
Yep.
or Antigravity, decides it needs to call a tool to get some data, it fires a request to Janus.
Right.
But in that fraction of a millisecond, a very tightly controlled sequence kicks off.
It does. First, Janus authenticates the caller to make sure the LLM is who it says it is. This is typically done using a scoped bearer token or mutual TLS. Once verified, Janus queries its own internal database for the requested tool's schema. It figures out the base URL, substitutes any necessary path parameters.
Like dynamically changing users to users 1, 2, 3 based on what the LLM asked for.
Right, exactly. So it prepares the HTTK request. But here's the critical intervention. If that downstream API requires authentication, Janus does not ask the LLM for the password.
Because the LLM doesn't have it.
Nope.
I noticed this in the docs. The connection configuration inside Janus only stores a reference to a secret. The documentation calls it an off-secret TRIF.
Yeah, that's the key right there.
So is this essentially a high-tech coat check? Like the LLM gets a ticket the reference, but only Janus gets to actually go into the back room, grab the expensive coat, which is the actual API key, and hand it to the destination.
That is the perfect way to visualize it. The LLM holds the coat check ticket.
Right.
Janus takes that ticket, walks to what the specs call its pluggable vaults, retrieves the decrypted credential, and then it injects it server-side as an HTTP header, like a bearer token or basic auth, right before it fires the request to the target API.
Wow. And the LLM never sees or touches the actual credential.
Never.
And these pluggable vaults, they aren't just, plain text files sitting on a server waiting to be read.
I'm absolutely not. Janus currently supports two fully implemented vault types. You can use a local JSON file or a shared PostgreSQL database.
Okay.
But in both cases, the secrets are encrypted at rest using AES-256 GCM.
Heavy duty.
Very. And the encryption key lives only in memory. So, I mean, if an attacker somehow steals the database file, all they get is cryptographically shredded ciphertext.
Makes sense.
Furthermore, there's a brilliant detail in the specs regarding cloud vaults. So things like AWS Secrets Manager, GCP, or Azure Key Vault.
Oh, yeah, the fail close thing. So because the cloud implementations aren't fully finalized in the code base yet, Janus just point blank refuses to start if you try to configure them.
Precisely. It will never silently pass a fake secret or default to an insecure state.
It just shuts down.
Yeah, if the vault isn't perfectly configured and secure, the entire gateway just shuts down and refuses to process traffic.
See, I have to push back on that design choice a bit.
Oh.
Yeah, in a massive enterprise, Failing closed means taking down a critical application. If there is, like, a temporary network blip reaching AWS Secrets Manager, Janus shutting down entirely seems like a massive risk to uptime. Aren't you basically trading a theoretical security risk for guaranteed downtime?
It's a fair point. That is the eternal debate between security engineers and site reliability engineers, right?
Yeah.
But in the context of autonomous AI, the calculus changes completely. It comes down to zero trust architecture. LLMs are incredibly prone to prompt injection attacks.
Sure.
If an attacker tricks an LLM into ignoring its system prompt, their very next move is almost always asking the LLM to print out its environment variables or its API keys.
I see.
Right. So if you prioritize uptime over security and allow a connection to degrade into an insecure state, you risk handing the keys to the kingdom to a malicious prompt. By enforcing a strict fail-closed state and only ever giving the LLM an off-secret tref coat check ticket.
The ticket, yeah.
Exactly. It becomes physically impossible for the LLM to leak the key. You cannot steal what you do not have.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
So securing the keys going out is a massive step, but to me, it only solves half the problem.
How so?
Well, if the target API processes the request successfully and sends back this massive JSON payload full of sensitive customer data, and that data hits the LLM, aren't we right back in a security nightmare? The outbound trip is secure, but the return trip is just hemorrhaging data.
Which brings us to the egress guard.
Okay.
This is where Janus implements an opt-in feature for data loss prevention, or DLP. An administrator simply sets redactionable true in the gateway configuration.
Wait, how does that work mechanically?
Yeah.
Like, before the response data ever reaches the LLM, Janus intercepts the payload and acts as, what, an aggressive filter?
Yeah.
Masking personally identifiable information and secrets on the fly.
Exactly. It intercepts everything. It uses a series of complex regular expressions and algorithmic checks to scrub both the tool arguments going out and the downstream responses coming back.
The specs mention it specifically targets things like emails, GWTs, AWS keys, API keys, and IBANs. But it also mentions Loon-validated credit card numbers.
Yeah.
So it's not just looking for any random 16-digit number. It's actually running the mathematical checksum to verify if it's a valid credit card before redacting it.
That is the crucial distinction, yes.
Wow.
If you just redact every 16-digit string, you end up breaking actual system IDs or database references, which, you know, causes the LLM to fail.
Right.
The Loon algorithm is a simple checksum formula used to validate a variety of identification numbers. By running that mathematical check in milliseconds on the payload, Janus ensures it only redacts actual financial data, heavily reducing false positives.
That's smart. Think about your own company's internal tools for a second.
Yeah.
If you hooked an LLM up to them right now and asked it to summarize a user profile, how much raw PII would it pull into its reasoning loop?
A ton.
But I do see a potential flaw here.
What's that?
If you point an LLM at an internal banking API, and you scrub all the account details and emails before the AI even sees them, the LLM is basically flying blind.
Right.
How can it analyze a user's account or provide useful context to the user if all the identifying data is masked?
That is the immediate concern developers raise when they first encounter aggressive DLP at the gateway level. It feels like you are breaking the AI's context.
Yes, you kind of are.
Well, on the surface, yes. But modern enterprise architecture relies on aggregate data or internal non-sensitive identifiers.
Walk me through what that looks like in practice.
Sure. So if the LLM needs to check an account balance, it shouldn't be querying by the customer's raw email address or their social security number. It should be querying by a safe internal UUID.
A system-generated string of characters that means nothing to an outside attacker.
Exactly. By enforcing the severe redaction at the gateway level, Janus forces developers to design compliance-first AI interactions. You basically have to build your downstream internal tools so that raw PII is never required as part of the LLM's reasoning loop in the first place.
It's a forcing function for good data hygiene.
Exactly.
You design the tool to only accept and return safe identifiers. And for compliance officers, the way Janus handles the audit logging for this is honestly incredibly elegant.
It really is.
When a redaction event happens, it logs it strictly by class and count. So the log output just says, you know, 3 emails redacted.
Right.
It never writes the raw sensitive value to the telemetry logs.
Because if your gateway scrubs the PII from the LLM but accidentally writes that same PII into your Splunk or Datadog logs, you still have a massive compliance violation.
Right, exactly. So, okay, we have the outbound API keys securely checked into a vault, and we have the inbound data strictly scrubbed of PII.
Yep.
But a system this paranoid still needs human operators. Developers and SREs have to actually map these tools and monitor the traffic, and often they're doing this in highly regulated, completely disconnected environments.
Yeah, and deploying modern web infrastructure in a fully disconnected, air-gapped bunker is usually a nightmare of dependency hell.
Oh, I can imagine.
You usually have to bring in a web server, a database, a routing engine, and all the JavaScript libraries just to get a basic dashboard running.
Duct taping it all together.
Pretty much. But Janus bypasses that entirely. It is compiled as a single, self-contained Go binary.
Just one file.
One file. It uses a compiler directive called go.embed to package a complete single-page web application directly inside that executable file alongside embedded SQLite support for local storage.
That's wild. So how does that work under the hood?
Well, the mechanics of go.embed are brilliant for enterprise software. During the build process, Go takes all the HTML, CSS, and compiled JavaScript for the portal and literally places them directly into the binary's memory space.
So no folders full of assets.
Right. There are literally zero files to serve from a disk at runtime. No external internet connection is needed to pull assets from a CDN.
It's like a lunar lander module.
A lunar lander.
Yeah, it is completely self-contained, right? It carries its own life support system in the form of the SQLite database and the embedded UI, never relying on a tethered emission control or the open internet to actually function. You just drop the single file onto a server, execute it, and instantly you have a premium dark mode web portal running locally, like a pop-up fortress.
Pop-up fortress. I like that. And for the administrators utilizing that lunar lander, it operates as a fully centralized command center.
What can they do in there?
Through the dashboard, you get real-time OpenTelemetry and Prometheus metrics. So you can watch traffic throughput and latency live. You can map the dynamic tools via JSON schemas directly in the user interface. Okay. And for environments where a web browser isn't available, they provide a cross-platform command line interface called MCP CLI that connects to the gateway remotely to perform all the exact same administrative tasks.
And one of the standout features in the source documentation, which I thought was really cool, is the automatic open API and Swagger generation.
Oh, yeah.
As you map these disparate internal tools into Janus, the gateway just aggregates them into a unified open API schema automatically.
It's seamless. It generates an interactive Swagger UI right in the portal, so a developer can point, click, and test the endpoints directly in their browser.
Which is huge for debugging.
Absolutely. They can verify that the API key substitution and the DLP redaction are working perfectly without having to write a single line of test code in Python or Node.js.
What's fascinating here is the pairing of extreme strictness with developer convenience. Because Janus uses fail-closed defaults across the board, like we talked about.
Right.
If your master gateway token or your JATE secret is less than 32 bytes long, the process refuses to boot.
Just shuts down.
Right. There is no default admin password you can accidentally leave exposed. But they paired that uncompromising strictness with this incredibly intuitive embedded UI and CLI. It proves that military-grade security doesn't have to mean a terrible, archaic user experience.
Exactly. But, you know, a single lunar lander module is perfect for an air-gapped room or a localized testing environment.
Sure.
But enterprises do not run on single servers. They run on massive, highly dynamic cloud clusters processing thousands of requests a second. Moving from a single binary to a massive Kubernetes deployment requires a total architectural shift in how state is managed.
Yeah. So when you deploy Janus to Kubernetes, the specs show it utilizes a horizontal pod autoscaler, dynamically scaling anywhere from 2 to 10 replicas based on CPU and memory load, all protected by a pod disruption budget to ensure minimum availability during cluster upgrades.
Right.
But if you have 10 different Janus pods running simultaneously, how do they stay in sync?
By entirely abandoning local state, the pods are truly stateless. They do not hold critical configuration data in their local memory or local Scrco files anymore.
So they don't use the embedded database when scaled out?
No. Instead, they all connect back to a highly available shared PostgreSQL cluster for storage. All the tool configurations, the issued tokens, the audit logs, and that AES encrypted vault we detailed earlier, it all lives in Postgres.
Which means any individual Janus pod can just crash, be destroyed by Kubernetes, and be instantly replaced without losing a single piece of configuration.
Exactly. It's completely ephemeral.
Well, wait, what about the connection to the LLM itself? Doesn't the LLM maintain an ongoing conversation state with the server?
It does. And this is where the AI infrastructure industry is actively shifting and where Janus implements a really critical architectural change. Under the legacy model context protocol, the connection used something called SSE, or server sent events.
Right, initializing via a DGPS endpoint?
Yep. But SSE is inherently stateful. It requires an open, pinned TCP stream between the LLM client and the server.
Okay, I see where this is going.
In a Kubernetes environment with multiple replicas behind a load balancer, that means you have to use something like an NGINX ingress controller to inject a route cookie to enforce sticky session affinity.
Sticky sessions.
Yeah.
If you ever had to debug a dropped connection in a massive Kubernetes cluster, you know the absolute pain of sticky sessions.
No, it's the worst.
Once an LLM starts talking to pod number 3, that load balancer uses the cookie to ensure every subsequent message goes only to pod 3. So if pod 3 gets overwhelmed by traffic or gets killed by the cluster, the physical connection breaks. The LLM loses its entire context window, throws an error to the user, and basically has to start the entire reasoning loop over from scratch. It is incredibly fragile.
State is the ultimate enemy of scale, which is why the recommended approach in Janus is the new streamable HTTP transport utilizing POST MCP.
Okay.
This aligns with the bleeding edge MCP 2026-0728 specification. It completely drops the initialization handshake. It is fully stateless, meaning there are no pin streams and no sticky routing cookies required.
So if the legacy SSE is like a dedicated physical phone line between the LLM and one specific server pod, is the new stateless HTTP more like a dispatcher?
A dispatcher?
Yeah, where the LLM just sends standard stateless POST requests to the load balancer, and any available Janus pod can grab the request, process the tool call, return the data, and move on to the next one.
Yes, that is exactly what it is. It transforms a fragile, memory-heavy AI bottleneck into a highly available self-healing network.
That's huge.
If a massive spike in autonomous AI traffic hits the enterprise, Kubernetes can just spin up 5 new pods, and the load balancer immediately starts distributing the POST requests across them. The system scales dynamically without ever dropping the LLM's context.
But wait, introducing a stateless dispatcher model creates a massive headache for debugging, doesn't it?
How do you mean?
Well, if a request goes from the LLM, hits a random Janus pod, gets routed to an internal API, and fails, how do you track where the error happened if it's jumping between all these ephemeral pods?
Ah, that is where distributed tracing becomes mandatory. Janus natively supports inbound W3C trace context headers.
How does that actually work mechanically?
It relies on two specific HTTP headers, trace parent and baggage.
Okay.
The trace parent header holds a globally unique ID for the entire transaction, which is generated back at the very beginning of the request. The baggage header holds custom key value pairs, like a specific tenant ID or user ID that travel alongside the request.
Got it.
So when the LLM SDK sends a request, it injects those headers. Janus reads them and natively propagates them straight into its own open telemetry spans before passing them down to the target API.
So a trace that starts all the way back in the LLM prompt continues seamlessly through the gateway, through the DLP redaction, into the tool execution, and down into the downstream database.
Exactly.
An SRE can just open their telemetry dashboard and pinpoint the exact millisecond a downstream API failed, regardless of which ephemeral pod handled the request.
It gives you total visibility across a completely stateless enterprise architecture. It's really elegant.
We have covered incredible technical ground today.
We really have.
To quickly recap the journey for you, we started by looking at how Janus uses a zero-trust coat check system so the AI never actually possesses the API keys to your infrastructure.
Essential.
Then we explored the egress guard, running algorithmic loon validations to mask PII on the fly and keep sensitive data completely out of the AI's reasoning loop. We unpacked the lunar lander deployment model, a self-contained Go binary powering an air-gapped command center. And finally, we explored how abandoning sticky state for streamable HTTP allows the entire gateway to scale dynamically across a Kubernetes cluster.
It really serves as a masterclass in modern AI infrastructure. But, you know, looking at the trajectory of this technology raises a fascinating question about where enterprise architecture is heading next.
Oh, well, where do you see it heading?
Well, right now we are analyzing how Janus dynamically translates human-built APIs into tools for LLMs, right?
Right.
And it's all managed and mapped by human administrators and SREs using that embedded portal. But what happens in the near future when these autonomous AI agents get smart enough to realize they are missing data and begin writing and negotiating their own open API specs?
Wait, you're talking about the AI defining and requesting its own tools?
Exactly. Imagine an autonomous agent determining it needs a new type of financial data to solve a user's prompt. It writes the JSON schema for the required tool and feeds it directly back into a gateway like Janus via an API, dynamically requesting a perfectly scoped permission grant on the fly.
That is, wow.
Are we currently looking at the foundation for machine-to-machine enterprise bureaucracies, a future where AI agents submit digital paperwork to AI gateways to negotiate access to internal systems, entirely without human intervention?
An AI DMV for API access. That is a wild and honestly somewhat inevitable thought to end on. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive into the architecture of Janus. Keep questioning the infrastructure of the tools you use every day, and remember, just because an AI is smart enough to do the job doesn't mean you should ever hand it the actual keys. Make it wait at the coat check.